From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, Twilight Zone expert Mark Zickery joins us with a fantastic new project, Space Command. Get ready for that. And next hour, Lost Civilizations. Maybe we'll find one or two. Here's what's happening. There's a story we've got in the news at coasttocoastam.com. It's been going on for a couple days in Denver. An unidentified flying object over Denver still has aviation experts scratching their heads. The object did not appear on radar in the area, but it nearly collided with a private jet 8,000 feet up. In an audio recording from the jet cockpit, a pilot can be heard telling air traffic officials, "I don't know if this was a remote-controlled aircraft or what, but something just went by the other way about 20 to 30 seconds ago, and it was like a huge remote-controlled aircraft. Who knows? Could be a drone, a model aircraft, a UFO." In March of 2011, residents of nearby Lafayette, Colorado, recorded video of three hovering, seemingly disconnected lights in the sky. The three lights remained in a triangular pattern, moving slowly toward the northeast. That one, the light extinguished, and witnesses say the two others just simply vanished like that. A federal judge has temporarily blocked enforcement of a section of the National Defense Authorization Act that opponents claim allows for indefinite military detention. U.S. District Judge Catherine Forrest in Manhattan has ruled in favor of a group of writers and activists who sued officials, including President Barack Obama, claiming that the act, signed into law December 31st, puts them in fear that they could be arrested and held by U.S. armed forces. David Seaman, independent journalist, frequent contributor to a number of news organizations, following this story for us. David, is this got teeth, this order by the judge?
George, this order is a very good sign, but at the same time, the actual proceedings in the court were quite scary. The details of this that I looked over, it sends a chill down your spine, because what actually happened is throughout the proceedings, the judge, who is a federal judge in the U.S. District Court, she asked the government's lawyers who were present, she was like, come on now, this would not really be used against any of these journalists or any of these activists in this courtroom, right? Because the argument being brought was that if you're a journalist, one of these guys is a former war correspondent for the New York Times, and their argument was that they have to go out there and interview people who may not like America. And this includes, you know, potential terrorists.
Sure.
This includes protesters, both here in the U.S. and in other countries. And you have to get their side of the story. But their argument was that even writing about somebody that is an enemy of America under NDAA could subject you to being imprisoned by the president's authority under his order, and then just sent away to rot in a prison somewhere for the rest of your life without a trial, without any kind of due process, and without your constitutional protections. And so they were waiting for these government lawyers to say, no, we would never actually do that. You're blowing this out of proportion. But that was not what they said. They were unable to get the government lawyers to say that they would not use these provisions against journalists.
They would not go there, would they?
They would not go there, which that really scares, that scared all the people following this case. And the judge did the right thing. She said, you know, given this is clearly a threat to freedom of speech. It chills the freedom of speech. If you know that something you write about or something you post even on Facebook or talk to your family about could result in being imprisoned by the federal government without being given a trial, without even knowing what you've done wrong, it's tyranny. It's absolutely insane.
What a story. And as you know, David, this was only a temporary block of this section of the National Defense Authorization Act. Keep your eyes on this one for us, David. And thanks for reporting that. If that's not enough, as we've been reporting, talking surveillance cameras that simply bark orders at passersby can also record conversations. These things are headed for the U.S. streets. There's a company called Illuminating Concepts. They are announcing the progress of what they call IntelliStreets. High-tech street lights with homeland security applications are now being installed in major U.S. cities. The streetlights also have loudspeakers that can give audible warnings to people, mimicking the talking surveillance cameras that are already in the United Kingdom. They bark out orders through microphones, telling people to pick up litter, leave the area. privacy expert Catherine Albrecht with us. Catherine, this is an incredible story. This is way too close for comfort.
Well, I got to tell you, George, we tend to think of streetlights as just streetlights. You know, they provide light, and these guys, the light is secondary. In fact, I think the light is almost superfluous. The whole concept here is that these streetlights form a wireless mesh of total surveillance in any communities that they've been placed into. According to the company, they're rolling them out in Detroit, Chicago, and Pittsburgh. They've got backing from the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Energy. I mean, this thing is really wild. And I've been telling your listeners for the last 10 years about RFID spy chips, about sensors being placed into the environment. And I'll tell you, when I first started talking about this, what, 5, 8, 10 years ago, people said, oh, that had never happened. Now we've got streetlights going into place that are hooked into the power grid, that are hooked into the city's systems, and they're capable of installing pretty much anything in there they want. As you mentioned, they're already doing the two-way surveillance. They've got concealed placement speakers and microphones. They've got image sensors, proximity sensors, pedestrian counters, and of course, don't forget that they can use this to make a quick buck by running advertising for what they refer to as captive audiences.
But why are they doing all this? I mean, what's the bottom line motive here, Catherine?
Well, you know, I don't think about this as lighting. I think about this as there is a desire on the part of Homeland Security, the Department of Energy, advertisers, marketers. They're all coalescing, and they all say, we would like to have our eyes and ears on city streets so that we can see who's walking around, figure out who they are. We can use facial recognition and identify them, and then we can serve them marketing. You know, we can serve them advertisements. And as you were just discussing and sending a chill down my spine, you know, we can listen to people and see who's saying things that we don't want people saying, and hey, figure out where they are, which direction they're walking, pick up their cell phone signal, and round them up and throw them in jail with no trial.
Interesting. Okay, thanks, Catherine. And, you know, most police departments get to the scene of the crime after the crime. Unfortunately, they get there too late. With systems like this, I wonder if they would have camera setups where they can sit back in the department and see like a gang of people and go, okay, officers, go out there now and wait because there could be trouble there. Who knows? That could happen. Do you go to a spa? Well, listen to this story. Fish that are used in trendy spa treatments to clean feet may not be so clean themselves, according to a new study. This is going to be put into one of those I can't believe it stories. In fish pedicures, the fish called Gara Rufa exfoliate clients' feet by nibbling on them. And during a session, clients immerse their feet or sometimes their entire bodies in water, with the fish allowing the fish to feed on dead skin for cosmetic reasons, or to control skin conditions. The researchers found that the supplies of these fish from Indonesia, destined for spas in the United Kingdom and probably here, harbored potentially harmful bacteria. The fish carried a diverse range of bacteria, some of which are capable of causing soft tissue infections in people, the bacteria resistant to a variety of antibiotics. Who would go to get a pedicure and have fish nibble at their feet? It's beyond me. Eating too much sugar can eat away at your brain power, according to some U.S. scientists who published a study showing how a steady diet of corn syrup sapped lab rats' memories. Dr. Betty Martini, who's an expert with us on all kinds of things, she's with us now. So, too much sugar makes you dumb. Well, we knew that, Betty, didn't we?
Yes. Actually, in reading the study, what it's basically saying is that eating too much fructose could interfere with insulin's ability to regulate how cells use and store sugar, which are necessary for processing thoughts and emotions. So this is where this comes from. But excess fructose intake has been associated with things like metabolic syndrome, elevated triglyceride levels, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, excess uric acid, which is when you get gout, and aging, and, of course, the insulin resistance from it. So, you know, you're affected with things like diabetes. So it really is bad news. In the study, they had two groups of rats, and one of them, they fed them some omega-3 fatty acids.
Right.
What it showed was that those rats fared a whole lot better going through the maze than the ones that were deprived of it.
That's good. Betty, thanks so much. So you know, be on guard. Don't eat a lot of sugar. It's not good for you, especially that processed stuff. Two patients in the United States who are paralyzed from the neck down have been able to control a robotic arm using their thoughts. It allowed one to drink unaided for the first time in nearly 15 years. The technique, described in the journal Nature, links a sensor implanted in the brain to a computer, which translates electrical signals into commands. Skechers, they have advertised that its toning shoes would help people lose weight, build muscle, get in shape. Claims that now will cost the company $40 million because U.S. regulators say, nope, we don't think that kind of stuff works that way. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s estranged wife, Mary Kennedy, who had fought drug and alcohol problems, found dead in her home, age of 52, no cause yet. The actor who played John Connor in Terminator 3, Nick Stahl, is missing, according to his wife. Law enforcement officials say that she filed a missing persons report. He's 32 years old, last seen on May 9th. Sources say that he had been frequenting the Skid Row area of downtown Los Angeles and that he may have gotten himself into some bad stuff. How would you like your grandma living in an abandoned hospital, so well known for its creepy atmosphere and hauntings that it has been used in various Hollywood productions by folks like Rob Zombie and the makers of horror films? The 107-year-old Linda Vista Community Hospital may soon earn a reputation once a proposed $40 million conversion is complete, transforming the abandoned haunted building into a senior living home. How about that? Up next, our friend Mark Zikri joins us. We'll talk about his latest project and a little bit about Twilight Zone next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Mark Zikri is an award-winning author of The Twilight Zone Companion and dramatic television credits to his name, including, listen to this, Star Trek, The Next Generation, Sliders, Friday the 13th, The Series, Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5, so many others, working on a new project called Space Command. But let's bring Mark in. Mark, it's always fun having you on. How are you?
Great, George. It's terrific to be here, as always.
You never stop here in Hollywood, do you?
No, one has to be very, very self-motivated.
Conferences, writing seminars, you're everywhere.
Yes, and in fact, I'm also doing a book with Guillermo del Toro, the director, so it's just great fun. I love all of this stuff, as you know.
Super. But you love The Twilight Zone,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, my God, yes, of course. It's such a wonderful show. It never gets old.
No, it really doesn't. You were able to clean up some of those old episodes, too, and put them on high-definition
video. On the
video.
Blu-ray, yes.
That's great.
The Blu-ray set, and you and I did a commentary on Twilight Zone. In fact, those seasons are now nominated for the Saturn Award. I won that award last year for seasons 1 through 2, and now 3 through 5 are nominated. So I think the George Norrie magic is still working. But they actually went back to the original negatives of Twilight Zone and made new prints in high-definition, so they're just gorgeous.
Talkie Tina.
Yes.
What is it, Mark, about the Twilight Zone that just lives forever?
Well, you know, I think when I interviewed Earl Hamner, who wrote 8 episodes of Twilight Zone, he said they're great stories well told. And I think that's really it. I think that because Rod Serling had something he wanted to say about life, about the world, about people, about, you know, the real world, that's why you can watch them over and over again, because even if you know what the trick of the story is, that's not what keeps you watching it. You really recognize the humanity of these stories and the great meaning, the depth of them.
A friend of mine's going to produce a movie, probably get you involved, on the life of Rod Serling. He's been working on that. And
yes.
That would be great.
I'm actually a consultant on that project. It's really fun to work on that.
I know who he wants to star as Rod Serling, and the guy's a great actor. So
wow.
We'll see what happens. Anyways, but you're involved in a new project called Space Command. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I'm as you know, I'm a huge fan of science fiction of the 50s, and there was a young director who heard me on Coast to Coast and in Europe, and he moved here for me to mentor him to make science fiction movies, and he started making science fiction movies one after the other, profitable films, and we were looking for a project to do together, And because I was a fan of movies like Forbidden Planet and old TV shows from the 50s like Space Patrol and Tom Corbett's Space Cadet, I thought it would be great to do a series of new films that have sort of that wonderful aesthetic from 1950s science fiction, including books, Ray Bradbury, Robert Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke, Isaac Asimov, and just bring back the kind of hopeful vision of the future that we had back then. And it's not nostalgic, and it's not quaint, and it's not tongue-in-cheek. It's just we're going to do it exactly as if we were doing Star Trek or Babylon 5 or Sliders or any of the shows I've done. And there's a new thing called Kickstarter where you can raise money without a studio or a network. So I thought, well, let's dive in. And so far, so good. We just launched a few hours ago, and we've already got $34,000.
Why aren't the big boys spending less money to do what like you guys are doing?
Well, you know, they have such overhead. I mean, what it will cost us to make, we're going to be making a series of four films, and we're going to be making a series of four films, and, you know, it's what the studios spend on lunches, you know, so we don't need the overhead that they have.
No, not at all. And that director, Neil Johnson, heard you on this program, sent me an email when he was working on his film Alien Armageddon.
Yes.
And he said, God, I'd love to get your voice on this. There's a scene here. He didn't have a lot of money. He didn't have a big budget. And so I said, listen, Neil, if you're a friend of the show and you listen, I'll do it for free. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to take a dime from you. And so I recorded it here in our studio. I sent it to him. And lo and behold, I saw it on his film. It was really cool.
It's a lot of fun. I think you're the high point of that film, quite frankly, George. And actually, we're writing. You and I had the interchange about Space Command, and you mentioned that someone had said you'd be reincarnated as a talk show host.
Oh, Dexter Monterey, Bruce Goldberg, yes. our expert on reincarnation and hypnotherapy.
Yes. So I've actually written you into the movie in that role. So we look forward to filming that.
How important computer animation to do what you now do?
It's very important. It's vital because, for instance, just a couple of years ago, as you know, I did a new Star Trek episode with George Takei that was done without a studio or network. It was called World Enough in Time, and it was 1 hour long, and it had over 700 effect shots, and those were all computer-generated. So we're looking to something similar to that. Doug Drexler, who comes off Battlestar Galactica, he just did a prequel to Galactica called Blood and Chrome that had over 2,000 effect shots. And for the video we've done for Space Command, just on our Kickstarter page, we already start generating some CG shots of what we want this to look like, and it's just phenomenal.
In the old days, how would you even get close to some of the effects that I've seen on, for example, one of your trailer types?
It would be very, very difficult. You would build physical models, and I actually know many of those guys who did that kind of stuff. There's a friend of mine named Greg Jean, who built the mothership in Close Encounters and built the city in Blade Runner, the miniature, and those were real models. They actually had to construct them. Now all of that stuff is done in a CG environment, and you and I have had this conversation before, where it's ultimately about the story and about the characters. You know, the tricks are wonderful and they help us tell those stories, but if there's not a human story at the heart of it, it won't stand the test of time.
But what I assume what computer animation does for you now, Mark, it allows producers like you who don't have these huge Hollywood budgets to go out and put a pretty good product together.
Yes, an amazing product, quite frankly. We can show it, we can do it, and at a very, very low budget. It's funny because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm doing a book with Guillermo del Toro, the director, and he's making a film called Pacific Rim that's $200 million. and yet a lot of what he's doing in terms of the tricks of the trade are what we're going to be doing with Space Command. It's not money is no longer what decides besides quality. What decides quality is the vision and the people that you work with, the brilliance of the individual people, and I'm very blessed to be working with some very brilliant partners.
Now, when you're done with it, how do you market it? How do you get it out? Do you get it to the big screen? Do you just go to DVD? What do you do with it?
At the moment, what we're planning, because we're going to be doing a series of these films, we're starting with four of them, and it'll be DVD, it'll be a video on demand, it'll be all of these different portals. Now, if someone comes to us and wants to release it theatrically, we're certainly open to that, and I think it'll certainly look great on a big screen. But we're not requiring that because we're making these for such a low budget. We don't need that in order to make our money back at all.
Could you sell it to HBO or Showtime?
Of course, or the Sci-Fi Channel. But again, you know, the reason we're doing it this way is because it's a conversation directly between us and the fans, the viewers.
That's right.
And because
it's interactive.
Well, I've been very lucky because in all of these many hundreds of hours of studio shows that I've written, network shows, generally the studio executives and the network executives have been smart and their notes have been helpful, but many of my friends are on shows where that's not the case and where the network execs rule with a very heavy hand and the shows become very, they lose their edge, they lose their vision.
They sure do. Stay with us, Mark. We're going to take some phone calls with you. If you're interested in doing a movie like Blair Witch for $25,000 and you want to learn, check in with us. We'll also talk about The Twilight Zone with Mark Zickrey next on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got a link for you right under Mark's name at coasttocoastam.com on Space Command. You can take a look at some of the work that they've been doing. Great graphics, truly great. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Zickrey. Mark, how do the big Hollywood producers feel when they see things like Blair Witch, $25,000 movies, make over $200 million? Do they go nuts?
Well, they try and figure out if there's a way to replicate it, if there's a way to duplicate it. A new model is the studios are making films for very low budgets, and then they might put $20, $30 million into promoting those films. So things like Paranormal Activity, those kind of movies. But, you know, the audience gets very tired of trickery. I mean, you really have to deliver the goods. And with digital cameras and people being able to edit movies on Mac laptops and things like that, it's becoming a much more democratic process. Anyone, anywhere can make a movie and put it out into the world. And I think that's great.
Look at Paranormal Activity.
Yes.
Same thing.
Exactly.
Doug Drexler, Oscar and Emmy winner. He's got credits including Star Trek, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine as well. He is working with you, Mark, on this project. We got Doug in for a couple minutes here. Hey, Doug, this sounds exciting, isn't it?
Hey, George, how are you? Yeah, it's exciting. We're really excited.
I mean, here you are. You're an Oscar winner, Emmy winner, and you're working on this tight little project with some great people. It's got to open up all kinds of avenues for people.
Well, you know, and Mark is the same way, and so is Neil. It's a love affair. We love this stuff. And if the studios don't want to make it, well, we're going to make it no matter what. We're going to do it. And what's happening, and what you guys were just talking about, is that the entire complexion of the way business is being conducted in Hollywood is totally changing because of the internet and the technology that's available. I mean, now people like Mark have the ability to put product out there in the same way that a studio does.
Well, I was going to say for, let's say, $50,000 or $75,000 for something like Space Command, if the big movie studios had that project, how much do you think they'd spend, Doug, on something like that?
Oh, you know it's going to be at least $200 million.
It's amazing.
But, you know, the thing that we have and that Mark has is we've got people who are really passionate, and there's something about it. It's just hardwired into us where we have to do this. We have to do it, and we'll do it for nothing. Just to be able to do it and work with each other.
Well, and you know what? You start winning some awards with these smaller projects, you're going to make Hollywood wake up. You know that.
Well, I hope. I don't know. I have my doubts.
Okay, of everything you've worked on, everything you've written, what's been your favorite project?
My favorite project? Well, you know, I got to say, I've been really, really fortunate to work on some amazing things. And even going back to Dick Tracy, which was a character makeup artist dream come true, where we worked with every amazing actor in Hollywood. That's tremendous. But, I mean, the last project that we did, which was Blood and Chrome, which was a prequel to Galactica, I got to say that I'm probably more proud of that than anything I've ever worked on in my life. There's like around 2,000 shots in the show that we did on time and on budget. And the thing about it is that when I say 2,000 shots, that means every single shot in the show is a visual effect. It's entirely green screen. We didn't build any sets at all.
That's amazing. It really is. Oh, well, good luck, Doug, with this and your career.
Thank you, George, and thank you for having us. And everybody out there, the Kickstarter page is going great guns. And thank you so much. And we promise that everything will be on the screen.
And see, that's what's also so dramatic nowadays, that people with projects go to websites like Kickstarter and they raise money. Let's take a few calls here, and then we're going to bring in Neil Johnson, director. Let's go to Scott in Burlington, Vermont. Scott, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Mark and Doug, good to talk to you. It's Scott Moody here back in the East Coast.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, guys. A couple things. George, one of the things that you've got going with this project is you've got an enormous amount of talent willing to put their lives into this thing. And I think because of that, because of being low budget, it's really going to attract Hollywood's attention.
I think so too. I think so too. Just on the clips I've seen, Scott, on the website that Mark sent to us that we've linked, truly amazing. I mean, I can't believe you can do that with a computer.
And you know, one thing I want to jump in with, George, and Scott worked with me on the Star Trek episode that we did without a studio or a network, World Enough in Time, which people can watch at markzickrey.com. One thing I was thinking about was, if Rod Serling were alive today, you know, he made Twilight Zone because he was censored on things like Playhouse 90, and he went to Twilight Zone and took a huge cut in pay to do that show. Nowadays, he would have gone to the internet, he would have gone to Kickstarter, he would have found the modern way of doing what he did back then. So it's the same thing, which is artists who have a love of something, who have a passion for something, wanting to make their absolutely best work and finding the way, any way they can, to make it work. And now it's a direct conversation between us and our audience, our fans, and we love that.
Scott's got to be exciting, isn't it?
Right on, Mark. And so I think, you know, the talent pool that you guys are putting together, as I know all you guys, is just amazing. So here's my question, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder here, George.
No, not at all.
Mark and Doug, if there's any way you could tell us anything about some of the actors that you're looking at for this?
Go ahead, Mark.
And perhaps maybe a little bit of hint on plot line.
Yes. In terms of the actors, it's the actors I've worked with on shows like Deep Space Nine and the Star Trek shows and all the things I've done previously. So Ethan Phillips, who played Neelix on Star Trek Voyager, Armin Shimerman, who played Quark on Deep Space Nine and the Principal on Buffy. We're talking with George Takei about having him in this as well. Bill Mumy, who I've been on Coast to Coast.
Oh, love the guy. Love
the guy. Babylon 5, yeah. And Doug Jones from Pan's Labyrinth and the Hellboy movies, Robert Picardo from Star Trek Voyager, Christina Moses, who worked with me on the Star Trek World Enough in Time episode. She was brilliant in that. Rachel Luttrell from Stargate Atlantis. These are all the people I've already reached out to and who want to be part of this. And George Takei, we'll see. He's not in a Broadway play, so we'll see if we can make the time for him. We very much want to work with him. But in terms of storyline, you know, it's basically, if you watch Forbidden Planet, if you watch the old Space Patrol shows, if you want to see a modern incarnation of that, the one thing I can say is we're looking at sort of that kind of space-going show, sort of a space police or space military organization serving the United Planets, which is sort of like the United Nations. But our chronology is set 60 years after that chronology. So because those shows and those movies were 60 years ago, it's as though those were real storylines, and now we're jumping 60 years ahead in that history to present this world. And it's interstellar adventures. It takes place in our solar system and in other solar systems in the galaxy. Really fun adventure stories and heroism, loyalty, love, all the things that we all just, you know, love about those great films and TV shows and books like The Martian Chronicles.
Neil Johnson, of course, has been director. He's got 8 sci-fi films under his belt, including the most recent, Alien Armageddon, of course, where my voice is there. Neil, how long is it going to take you to shoot this? What do you think?
Yeah. How long will it take you to shoot it, Neil?
Which one?
The first one. We're going to be making minimally 4 of them. But it's. I think, Neil, we're going to, the idea, I think, is we're going to start in September, right?
I'd like to take our time with these films and really spend time shooting the movies and making them good quality rather than just banging it out. You know, it's going to be at least a 20-day, 25-day shoot. The more time you spend shooting, the better it looks in the end.
Yeah, and then the post-production is going to be very long, possibly a year or so, because there's so many effect shots and we have to really coordinate it. So we'll take our time in pre-production and then, you know, and then shooting it with all the actors we love and then post-production, you know, so it's going to be as polished as a jewel by the time we're done.
Okay, good. Good luck to you, Neil. That's going to be good. Don in Omaha, Nebraska, welcome to the show. Hi, Don. Don, you're here?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, can't trust this old phone sometimes. I wanted to ask Mark, there were a few episodes that he kind of panned in his book about the Twilight Zone. And I wanted to know if he ever went back and looked at any of those and thought, you know, this one wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Yes, actually, that's true. That's true. You know, I started writing that book when I was 22 years old, and so I was young and cocky and, you know, hadn't had the life experience I've had since. And particularly with some of Earl Hamner's episodes, there's one called The Bewitching Pool, and I was fairly critical of it, but some people wrote me and they said, you know, this is the only TV show that ever talked about divorce, and when I was a kid, my parents were going through divorce, and when I saw that episode, I felt like I wasn't alone. My reality was mirrored in this episode. So that episode and another episode that Earl wrote called The Hunt, which is sort of an afterlife story, dealing with heaven and hell. I've really come to have affection for those episodes. So it's funny because we're now talking about doing a revision of the Twilight Zone Companion. We're talking about doing an iPad version where you'll literally be able to read the book and I'll update the text, but then you'll be able to touch the screen on every single episode and hear the people who made the episode talk about making that episode. And I'm just eager to do that project. I think it's going to be fabulous. But when I revise the Twilight Zone Companion, I'll keep the comment that I had back then, but then I'll revise it saying, now looking back from this point in my life, this is what I think subsequently.
Mark, is there a chance that Space Command will win some award, maybe a little Oscar of some type?
Yeah, well, it'd be great to have Nobel Prize for Best Science Fiction Movie. They give money with that one.
I mean, that would be incredible.
if
a writer can get it, or a director, or for graphics or something.
I know. Well, you know, the funny thing is that I've been nominated for the Hugo and the Nebula, which are the two top awards in science fiction. I won the Saturn, as we mentioned earlier. And so, you know, it's a lot of fun to be nominated. It's a lot of fun to win. But again, as we said earlier, the reason we're doing that is we're doing this project is for the love of it and because we just are dying to tell these stories and work with the people we love to work with. So awards and that sort of thing are nice, but they're the icing on the cake. They're not the cake.
Did you even consider pitching this to the studios?
No.
Not at all. Wasn't even part of the plan.
No, because again, and in fact, I'm doing Magic Time with a big Hollywood producer. He's optioned it, and we're going to be bringing it to the networks. This is the series of novels that I did recently.
Yeah.
And when he started hearing about this project, he said, "Well, why don't we walk it into the networks?" And I said, "No, because first of all, the time it would take just to have the meetings and pitch it and sell it and develop it, we can have two or three or four of these made, and." If the networks get wind of it and if they want to come aboard and not wreck it, if they're going to see our vision and go along with it, that's fine. But this train is moving, and there's also something very nice about having the audience, the fans, be our collaborators. We're all helping make this a reality thanks to Kickstarter. And it's funny because on the Kickstarter page, there's a little video of me where I say to the potential backers, our audience, I say the single most important member of the team is you. And it's true. I believe it because I like that relationship. I like all of us making this.
I mean, do they become owners in this?
When they pledge money, they get DVDs, they get signed posters, they get many things. So there are collaborators, but they're not investors per se. On the other hand, if someone wants to invest, if they want to come to us with, $50,000, $100,000, then we can...
Then you'll talk.
Yeah, we can definitely have those conversations, absolutely.
Well, you know what? All you got to do is roll out Paranormal Activity in Blair Witch and say, it does happen once in a while. Let's go to Birmingham, Alabama. Jeff is with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hey, now. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wonder if you might get John Eves also to work with you, get as many effects gurus you can. I'm very pleased in how CGI is going. I'm hoping you'll tell me that maybe that your 1950 type spaceships will look a little bit like the Leif Erikson, which does look like something that evolved from the orbit jet, because I'd really like this. The model's already out there, and something just as a suggestion. You know, there are a lot of dead malls dotting the landscape, a lot of these closed-down malls. If you were to put a science fiction set there and work with somebody that has one of these QSR laser tags, that way you could actually have the set making money even when you're not filming.
That's very fun, yes. I think that's a brilliant idea. It's funny, I just drove back from Scottsdale, where a friend of mine is writing Brad Pitt's new movie, and we stayed with him over the weekend. And on the way back from Arizona, I saw this dead mall out in the middle of the desert, and I actually took photos of it to show Neil Johnson and suggest we shoot there. When I've been a big fan of dead malls ever since the George Romero zombie movies, and but in terms of Leif Erikson and all of that, we're definitely looking at a lot of 1950s era spaceship designs, Wally Wood, all that stuff, Chesley Bonestell
without the string.
That's right. Yes, exactly. But if as George mentioned, we've got spacecommandmovie.com is the link to our Kickstarter page, and or one can go to the Coast to Coast page and click through on to Space Command and see exactly what our designs are looking like.
Let's go to Florida. Kelly's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Mark, I was wondering, you're involved with shows that I grew up with and just absolutely love, Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, and it seems like Hollywood wants to ruin those stories by going back in our future but their past and rewrite things. Why don't they continue with where they left off in those stories, like Deep Space Nine with the Jim Hadar? And I mean, you could have the Federation Space Marines. You know, we've tried the science and that didn't work. Now we have the Marines.
Well, you know, I think the thing to remember is that most of the studio and network executives are not science fiction fans. They really don't get it. I mean, I talk to executives at various networks where they would say to me, I tried to watch Babylon 5 and I don't understand it, or I just don't understand Sliders. And, you know, I don't think there should be a law passed where people have to love science fiction, but, you know, if they're in charge of the science fiction shows, it'd be nice if they got it. But I think that at the end of the day, it's up to us, the creators and the fans and the audience, to create the stories that really show a hopeful and inventive and well-rendered future, and that's what we're up to right now.
Mark, I've got to tell you, you know, you, Doug Drexler, Neil Johnson, you guys are very creative,
Thank you. Extremely creative,
and, you know, when you put together a group of people who are tops at what they do, how can you miss?
Thanks. That's true, George, but also, you know, I've got to say, you know, one of the reasons that you and I are friends is because it's clear that you're doing what you do for the love of it. You know, there's no cynicism to you at all. It's clear who you are. There's authenticity there, and I think people respond to authenticity. And when I bring aboard Doug Drexler or Neil, I mean, we're all resonating with the fact that we're doing it for the right reasons. And I think that's why I've had the career I've had, and that's why I'm proud of the body of work I've created, whether it's the Twilight Zone Companion or the TV I've written or any of the things. You know, I stand for the work I've created because it represents what I believe and who I am.
One or two more here. Louisville, Kentucky, first-time caller. Ed, thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, hi, guys.
Hi, Ed.
My questions concern scripts. Where do you get your scripts? I feel like I'm a writer, and I've written a couple scripts. I just recently sent one to the Big Bang Theory, and I was wondering, you know, what would I expect for payment, or and do you take spec scripts?
Well, because I'm a writer, I'm writing the scripts for Space Command. I'm writing most of them and co-writing them, a couple of them with friends of mine who are Emmy winners and so forth. So we're not open for script submissions, but in terms of getting scripts made, you can submit them to Hollywood. There are different ways to do that. If it's Writers Guild signatory for an hour show, you might get $20,000 or $30,000, and then when they rerun it, they give you more money. For a movie, you might earn, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It pays well, but if it's not Writers Guild signatory, it pays a lot less. But any network drama or comedy is going to be Writers Guild rates, and you can go on the Writers Guild website and find out what those amounts are. But the other model is if you're a writer and you're writing scripts and you want to see it made, you can do exactly what we're doing, which is you can go on the internet, you can raise money via Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and you can make what you want to see. What's in your mind can become a reality out in the world. All you have to do is pick up a camera, you know, gather some friends together and rock and roll.
Did I read that Kickstarter website correctly? I mean, are you taking as less than a dollar from somebody?
Some people can pledge as low as a dollar, and our top amounts of pledges, if someone wants...
Part of a movie for a dollar.
Here's a great one, George. If someone pledges $250,000, they get the entire spaceship set.
If someone's going to spend $250,000, I'd want you as part of the deal.
Well, I think we can work that out.
you are one of a kind. Mark, we're almost out of time. Give your websites, would you?
It's spacecommandmovie.com and markzickrey.com.
And Z-I-C-R-E-E.
That's
is,
right.
Is the way to spell it. All right. Talk to you soon. Yeah, give us updates on this project, would
I
you?
I will, George. I will.
Space Command. It's great. I mean, I'm just truly blown away by the computer graphics and what has happened to the industry now when they can do this and go against some of the big boys in Hollywood. It's unbelievable. Up next, we're going to talk about lost civilizations on Coast to Coast AM. So get ready for one of those classic shows. We shall be right back.